World Mental Health Week, this is Walk In My Shoes Radio, broadcasting live from St. Patrick's Mental Health Services, Dublin 8.
Tilted. This is Walk In My Shoes Radio, broadcasting live from St. Patrick's Mental Health Services in Dublin 8. And I'm Pat O'Mahony.
And I'm Dr. Mally Coyne, but you can just call me Mally.
No formalities around here.
No, but I like sure, that. Might as well like start. That. And we want to thank James Patrice for the past 2 hours of music and absolutely amazing chat. We listened to his show and really, really enjoyed it.
For someone who's never done radio before,
yeah,
he was very, very good.
Yeah,
that was his first time doing radio.
Incredible, wasn't he?
Yeah,
real natural.
Whereas we're wizened old, experienced old.
Well,
less of the
maybe
old,
that's you. I'm the novice kind of. You know,
you've done a bit, or you have done some
bit,
radio.
A little bit.
You've done local. What have you done?
Dublin City FM.
Good.
Yeah.
I don't know what I've done, but I think I got away with it. I think I still am. Here we are, kicking off 2 hours, and it's actually the last 2 hours of the week of Walk In My
That's
Shoes
incredible.
Radio for 2007.
Unbelievable.
Week has flown.
Yeah, and what a week it's been.
It's been good fun.
You've been here every evening.
I've been here every evening. Yeah. I had Pam Flood with me on Monday. Pamela. on Monday and Wednesday. Mm-hmm. We called the show Head to Rails.
Brilliant.
Combination of head to toe and off the rails.
Yeah.
See what we did there?
Yeah, God, see that. Clever. We should call our show something as well.
We'll work on that during
the
next
song.
Yeah. So tonight, how a Facebook page, an old phone, and a commitment to help others has saved lives.
Wow, that's quite something. And shortly, we also look at antenatal fitness from Bump to Beyond. But first, we'll have an amazing song by Outkast, Hey Ya.
1, 2, 3, up. My baby don't mess around because she loves me so, and this I know for sure. But does she really wanna, but can't stand to see me walk out the door. Don't try to fight the feeling, cause the thought alone is killing me right now. Thank God for mom and dad for sticking two together, cause we don't know how. Come on.
Outkast, Hey Ya, the song of the summer of, I think, about 2005. Oh, yeah, I think it was that. No,
I think it was 2003.
It was 2003. Well spotted. That's Mally keeping me on the straight and narrow for the night. Thank you very much.
I didn't even Google it, I promise. I just remember where I was.
You just
at the
know
time.
Your stuff.
Not bad for a psychologist.
You know, that'll never take off around here, knowing your stuff.
Oh, right.
I've been getting away with it all week. So don't you be raising
I'll
standards.
I'll make you call me doctor in a second.
Your Highness. Raising awareness for World Mental Health Week, this is Walk In My Shoes Radio. You can get in touch with us at walkinmyshoes.ie. We're on Twitter and Facebook at Walk In My Shoes. And if you're tweeting, the old hashtag is WIMSFM.
Now, self-care is never so vital as when we're having a baby, as when there's a baby on the way. And here to help our expectant is an expectant mum to de-stress and take a deep breath are Elaine McMahon-Dossett, founder of Fear Free Birthing, which I love the title of, and The Nurture Room. And Louise Herity, radio and television broadcaster, qualified fitness instructor and mum-to-be. Welcome, Elaine and Louise. How are you doing?
Great, thanks.
Yeah.
So only one of you is pregnant.
I was going to say, yeah, yeah. I'm not expecting.
Okay.
I was very disappointed when only one bumpy woman walked in.
And you got the wrong one. I won't say that.
No, I knew Louise was pregnant. I could stop up then, but I said to Elaine, so, and I hadn't time to check out the belly.
You should never assume, I don't think.
No.
Even if I saw a woman with a 9-month
I know,
bump,
don't go there.
But it's
don't
okay.
go
but
there.
You know something, on the tube, Elaine, you're just back from London, but on the tube all the time, you know, it gives or on a train, you know, if someone is pregnant, you offer them your seat. And so many times I'd be on the tube going, is she pregnant or is she just fat?
They've got special tube badges that says, you know, I'm pregnant, give me
a baby on board.
So it's so awkward.
Elaine, I was just wondering what prompted you to set up Fear Free Birthing in the Nurture Room. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, well, it started off when I was expecting my first son 5 years ago. I've only got one little boy who's five now. So I guess I entered into pregnancy feeling quite frightened and fearful. And I was just kind of looking for ways that I could prepare mentally for the birth experience because I was really quite concerned about it. A little bit of Googling, came across a word called hypnobirthing, which I'd never heard of before. Mm-hmm. And after I kind of convinced my husband to come to this class with me, we ended up leaving completely transformed. It changed the way I felt in my pregnancy. I felt very happy and excited about the birth, and it wasn't the case that I was expecting to have, you know, just the most perfect natural birth experience, but I was ready for it, whether it was an emergency cesarean or an unplanned home birth or whatever. I just felt prepared. So before I gave birth, I actually signed up to train and be a practitioner as a hypnobirthing practitioner with natal hypnotherapy. And
gave birth? Wow, that was very proactive.
When I rung up the lady, Maggie Howell, and I said to her, I would love to train with you during my maternity year. Mm-hmm. She was like, oh, well, how did your birth go? What happened? I said, oh, I'm due to give birth in 3 weeks. And she was like, what? And I said, I know. I said, honestly, I just feel so positive about how this birth will go that I want to help other women feel like this.
How did it go?
Yeah, how did it go? I always wonder because I just remember my ball being in the back of the car and my music, and it just, you know, it didn't go to plan. But then I hadn't done this hypnobirthing, and that sounds really interesting. How did it go?
It was amazing.
Really?
Yeah. It was a really long birth. Like, it was nearly 24 hours, mm-hmm. and it was the hardest thing I've
ever done.
I'm sorry, I can see her next to me.
She's about to give birth to her first in 16 weeks. It's okay. We'll give you a little
session.
I know, I could feel the eyes. I'm sorry. But no, it was the hardest thing that I've ever done in my life.
But you said it was amazing.
Amazing. And I honestly said that straight after. I said I would do that again. It was amazing.
Wow. In what sense? Was it just a feeling of more control, empowerment?
Yeah.
Was it?
I didn't feel frightened during the birth. There was times when I questioned things like, oh, how long is this going to be? Mm-hmm. And one stage they told me, oh, you're not in labor yet, because they mark labor on how far dilated you are. Mm. You know, so if you're not 4 centimeters, for example, then they say you're not in established labor. So that freaked me out when I was only 2 centimeters and they're saying you're not in established labor.
And
I was,
pain.
And I knew I'm in labor.
That's what I was going to ask. What about pain? I mean, you said it was fantastic, but
I felt pain.
Right.
I did.
Were you in control of that pain, or it didn't concern you?
No, I was able to just let it go, almost.
Oh, wow.
Like, I was able to just to let it wash over me. Like, I accepted it, I didn't fight it.
I'm like that when I watch Everton on the telly and they get beat. I'm in pain, but I just, you know, I just let it go.
Get used to that feeling.
I better this year.
Yeah, so it was just, I just felt mentally okay, and it was really tough on my body. Like, the way we explain it to people is, imagine if you were doing a marathon. Like, for anyone who doesn't run or train, like, they just think, no way, that's impossible, wouldn't even get around the first mile. But when you get into that sort of thought process of preparing yourself to do something as big as that, something like a marathon, then you're going to pace yourself, you're going to prepare yourself in the months leading up to it. Mm-hmm. And then once it comes, you're ready for it. You know you're going to hit those hurdles when you feel like you can't go on. And that's where you strategically place your cheerleading team along the route, you know, to give you those bottles of water and those encouraging words. And that same thing is what we do now in hypnobirthing. We train your birth partner to be there to support you, so that when you do come across that hurdle or that hard part of the labour, which everyone will hit in some form or another, it's about being ready for it and accepting it and having the right people around you to get you through it.
Have you signed up for it, Louise?
The marathon.
The marathon, yes, of course. To watch Everton.
No, I haven't. But it's very interesting because it's so funny. Like, I think I know everything about the fitness side of pregnancy, and I have a bit of experience teaching in that, but I wouldn't know anything about hypnobirthing, or I haven't had any of my antenatal classes or anything like that yet. So it's all very new to me. So it's very interesting. Yeah.
I mean, it's taken off. It's huge in the UK now, and in Ireland now they're even running it in hospitals as well, you know, as part of their antenatal preparation. They're offering it to.
So you do a different preparation for, you do fitness.
Well, not that I do. See, this is my first pregnancy, but in previous years, since I qualified as an instructor, I taught women pre and post baby. So I know a lot about what you should and shouldn't do. And then I practice it myself, which was one good thing for me when I discovered I was pregnant. I said, great, now I know what I should be doing and what I shouldn't be doing.
Well, tell us, what should you be doing and what should you not be doing?
Okay, well, first of all, it's very important to know that every, obviously, woman is different. And if you're already fit and healthy and going to a gym or doing regular exercise, then you can absolutely continue with it, you know, during your pregnancy. The one thing is, I would say, is though, if you're not really a gym goer or a person who does regular exercise and gets pregnant, you don't panic and go, oh God, I better start working out because I'm pregnant now. Unfortunately, you're not going to take up a huge regime. What you can do for somebody who maybe isn't a frequent exerciser and is expecting is pregnancy yoga, mm-hmm. And swimming, because there's non-impact, of course, and you know, you're not going to overexert yourself. But if you are somebody, and like a lot of women now these days, especially in Ireland, are fit and healthy, mm-hmm. So if you are somebody who's already fit and healthy, by all means you can continue your workout. You just have to consider a few things, like less intensity. You're not going to do 20 burpees and, you know, 10 squats. Just lower the heart rate. Also, you wouldn't, you don't do anything on your back in the supine position.
The flat position
flat
on your back.
Position.
Yeah, you have
so
to
you'd have an incline bench if you're doing weights, something like that. Also, of course, things like in the first trimester, the first 12 weeks, you're going to be nauseous, or most women are, so take that into consideration. Warm up. There's loads of different things you have to consider, and also listen to your body, mm-hmm. because I also think I don't want to come across, because I'm still running, like I did the half marathon 2 weeks ago, and I'm still doing all my fitness, but just less intense.
Wow, that's
when
amazing.
Are you due?
February, so okay. I'm about 23 weeks now. But like that, I know, like I run marathons, so I know what I should do. I went half an hour slower than my usual time, you know. Mm-hmm. Hydrate, take on loads of water. So because you listen to your body, you can continue. But then there are days, as I said, I don't want to come across as someone who's, oh my God, I'm so fit and healthy, where I just go, I'm just not doing anything today, and I just watch Netflix all day. So you can do that too, you know?
Yeah. And so, Elaine, in terms of your practice, what, mm-hmm. you know, how can people get in touch with you, or, you know, get involved in hypnobirthing?
Well, I have a Facebook page as well that's kind of my most active one, which is at Birth Fear Free. And through that, I give kind of hints and tips on what to do during the pregnancy months and postnatally as well. But it's all about just preparing yourself mentally so that you can get through the birth process and postnatal for all the new challenges that motherhood brings as well.
Okay.
So it's using deep relaxation, self-hypnosis, mindfulness practice, breathing techniques, visualizations. It's quite a lot.
We've only scratched the surface on this. We've a lot more to talk about, but let's take a piece of music. This is... there won't be a lot of dancing. This is so not appropriate. Sister Sledge, He's the Greatest Dancer.
Touring, I knew that it wasn't my thing.
That was He's the Greatest Dancer by Sister Sledge, and this is Walk in My Shoes Radio, broadcasting live from St. Patrick's Mental Health Services, Dublin 8. And this is Mally Coyne with Pat O'Mahony.
That's me.
Yes, that's you.
Thanks.
We're here in studio.
In case I'd forgotten about me.
Just in case. And we're here in studio on our last show of the week,
wow,
which is pretty incredible. And what a week it's been. We've got Elaine McMahon Dossett in studio and also Louise Harrity, and we're back with them. Hi, how are
Hello.
You doing?
Great. Now,
just Elaine, I just wanted to ask you another question. Do you only work with women pre-birth, or do you also work with women after they've had a baby? Because obviously, you know, I've had two kids, and it's, you know, it's really an exhaust. It is. And I'm not trying to scare you over there, Louise.
I thought you were trying to mooch a session with her.
I know. Well, yeah, maybe.
Come on over.
But it's quite an exhausting time. So I'm just wondering what kind of self-care tips you would have for women who've had their babies. And do you work with women after they've had their babies?
Yeah, so you can continue on. Because basically what you're learning in these pregnancy classes is like a life skill. It's something that you can continue on into the early years in parenting. But also the dads that come to me continue on with these techniques as well, which is why I set up Nurture Room. But I'll just speak a little bit about the motherhood side of things first. With the mummy relaxation, we do the same sort of techniques, the same guided visualization. You still do your self-hypnosis, the mindfulness skills, the deep breathing. So you're getting time out just for yourself as like a relaxation class, and kind of keep up your practice of your self-hypnosis. Because relaxation is a skill, like it's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to get good at it. And if you can give yourself the time to get good at it when you're kind of taking time out of your usual routine, then it means that when you are feeling stressed or anxious, you'll be able to go to whatever technique you prefer. So some people, for example, they just prefer the mindfulness aspect. Some people love the self-hypnosis. Some people love the kind of positive affirmations or mm-hmm. the post-hypnotic suggestions. It's about picking and choosing which ones suit you, because everyone's different, and everything that you go through in your life will affect you differently. So you can have a little kind of toolkit of things that you can utilize depending mm-hmm. on how you're feeling and how you best need to, target that.
So it's probably a good idea to have started that pre-birth so that you get into
yeah.
that routine if you can, but if you
yeah,
can't.
Yeah, I mean, even some people I start with from fertility, you know, when you're going through trying to conceive or assisted fertility, it's such an emotional roller coaster. You can start utilizing these techniques like instantly, like as soon as you're in that mode, so that you're able to just ride that emotional roller coaster easier. Mm-hmm. And then by the time you get into, you know, the pregnancy side of things, even that I do have women who come to me like quite late on in pregnancy when it just kind of hits them, I'm about to be a mum and I'm not prepared. I'm
like Louise. I'm like, there's going to be a hole in the window. I'll be running out so quickly in a second.
The window's open, so you can go out the window if you want.
Louise, you were talking about how your fitness regime has changed, i.e. most
yeah.
importantly, you've eased off.
Of course, yeah.
What about diet?
It's funny.
We need to judge you whether it's funny.
It's a big
or not.
Box
we have
of
chocolate here.
It's a box of chocolates in front. It's so obviously you have great intentions to eat well, and I always would try, pregnant or not. But and it's not even that I didn't actually have cravings as such. I had more food aversions. So I love coffee, couldn't touch it today. Actually, I had my first cup of coffee today since June. I just went off it, which is a good thing, because mm-hmm. you don't want to drink caffeine much anyway. But ultimately, I am definitely eating more. But you should add, if you're exercising and pregnant, you need to add about an extra 300 or 400 calories a day. If you're not exercising, you need to add a few extra calories, obviously, as well. Mm. But I don't think you need to eat for two. So, like they say, you're not really eating for two. You're not going to double your calorie intake.
Except
and that is the problem
cream.
That some... ice cream. I certainly have a bigger appetite, that's for sure. Mm. But then, of course, this week, I've heard so much about the dreaded heartburn. It's just hit me this week. Oh, my goodness. I didn't realise how bad it would be.
Mm.
So anything you eat, you can just feel...
Can you do anything about that heartburn?
Just Ready? Drink a load of that stuff in the car.
Gaviscon?
Gaviscon. Yeah. I remember just drinking it, like gallons of it in the car. It was
but
awful.
There's also some yoga stuff that you can do to help with the heartburn indigestion.
So
like any of the chest opening stretches like this.
Oh.
That will give you space, I guess, and help the breath move down through the body. They can be very beneficial for the heartburn issues.
Sounds
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'll try that. They also say heartburn, I hate these like old wives' tales, that heartburn means a hairy baby.
I know.
I'm sure like,
No.
My baby's going to have a good head of hair anyway, because I've got a lot of hair.
Yeah.
So.
No, I don't think there's any truth to that.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
But yeah, no, appetite-wise, yes, certainly I do have a bigger appetite. But it's just trying to be healthy as well.
Elaine, can I ask you, it occurred to me as... at the very top of the interview, and you said, you know, you're pregnant and you suddenly realised, God, what do I do?
Yeah.
Are we missing, and society has changed, of course, but back in the day, and I don't know how many generations I'm going back, but you know, the mothers and the grandmothers told you what was going to happen. They took you under their wing. There was this, there was a connection to previous generations. Is that gone?
Well,
especially at times of pregnancy.
Yeah, I think fear has certainly spread across the generations,
that's a fear of, because they don't know.
Yes, it's kind of lack of knowledge and lack of trust in the process. Like, we are so lucky in Ireland that we do have the most amazing medical care teams around us when we need them, but we should know or understand that it's our bodies first, and they're there to support us when we need them. So instead of, I guess, treating pregnancy as an ailment or as a sickness, it's about feeling healthy and positive and confident in your body, that this is like a natural bodily function that your body was perfectly designed to do. And in those instances where you do need support, we have got that here, and we are so lucky. So we should feel 100% safe in that kind of aspect.
But we should pick the brains of previous generations. We shouldn't try and, you know, not that I'm ever going to get pregnant, but, you know, women shouldn't try and do it on their own.
Well, that's true, but unfortunately, I think most of us now who are giving birth, our mums were probably giving birth in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and unfortunately that was time when medical intervention was getting quite high and quite normal.
But they would still know a lot about the process.
Yeah.
You know, and they would...
But like for my mum, for example, was very much... you know, go private, take all the drugs they give you, you know. So that was her knowledge. Okay. And she was frightened for me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she was frightened for me. And she came to my birth, and she was there as my second birth partner. Wow. And she was in awe. Like, she really did. She felt a new connection to
what
women's
about
bodies.
Men's roles? I'm just wondering, you know, how do men take to the hypnobirthing classes and that? Because I remember bringing my husband to one of these... Saturday classes, and he was just like...
The faces.
Yeah, it was just like, I think they were talking about, you know, your babies on a boat and all this, and then he was just like, well, the actual, you know, the actual birth was very different to the way we had imagined it.
Yeah,
you know?
I feel so sorry sometimes for the dads. No, most of the birth partners that come to the classes, like, probably don't really want to be there, and they're just there to support the partner. But honestly, within the first half a day or the first even couple of hours, everything that we're talking is evidence-based. It's quite scientific. It's nothing wishy-washy. It's, you know, there's all evidence behind why this is scientifically proven to help the body, your own natural hormones and everything. And then obviously we don't just talk about natural birth. We do talk about cesareans and how you can utilize the benefits of using the hypnobirthing techniques, having a cesarean or while you're having an epidural.
Oh, okay.
Some women are frightened of needles. Yeah. So imagine coming in for an epidural and you're petrified of needles. Like, that's not going to be good. So you can use the hypnobirthing techniques for that as well.
So just the two of you, your contact details before we go. Louise, you said you write a blog.
I started a blog just about my own fitness. That's Fit Mam 2B.
Okay, I like that.
Fit Mam 2B. Oh, very
okay.
good.
Okay. b.wordpress.com. But I'm on Twitter at Louise Herity.
Okay.
Go on ahead, Lynn.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, social media at birth fear free. Mm-hmm. But the website is fearfreebirthing.com.
Brilliant. Excellent. Right. Thank you so much, ladies, for coming in.
Thank you.
It hasn't given you the inkling to maybe have number three.
No, ask my husband, but I pretty much think that's no. He's looking after the two at home today. No.
All right. Because our next song is Simply Red. Thanks, guys, for coming in.
Thank you so much.
It's Simply Red, and something's got me started.
To you. Lately since we parted,
We've got to start talking about mental health. It can get better. Log on to walkinmyshoes.ie to find out more.
By Supergrass, and this is Walk In My Shoes Radio, broadcasting live from St. Patrick's Mental Health Services, Dublin 8, encouraging you to get the conversation started this Mental Health Week. And this is Mally Coyne and...
Pat O'Mahony.
Very good.
Hey, on still, cue.
Still to come, we've got Shona, a tool survival kit for girls.
And a duo who are creating an online community to help anyone in need. But first, nestled in the stunning Liffey Valley is St. Edmundsbury Hospital, the ideal location for recovery. And here to tell us more about her work with mood disorders and a new initiative at St. Ed's is Dr. Maria Morgan. Well, I'm surrounded by doctors.
Thank you very much.
How do you feel about that?
I feel in good company. I feel safe and secure knowing there's doctors to the left of me, doctors to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
That's very good.
It's a kind of a song.
Oh, right. Yeah, I know that. But it was very, good timing. Maria, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you. And we just want to know a little bit about your professional background and how did you come to specialise in mental health?
Sure. Well, I'm a medical doctor. I'm a graduate of University College Dublin back in the day.
It covers a myriad of
Let's
things.
Let's say early 90s. Yeah. So would have done my housemanship in Limerick and Belfast, so dabbled for a little while in endocrinology, vascular medicine and geriatrics, medicine of the elderly, we now call it, after which I would have done my training in psychiatry, mainly in Dublin.
Right. Where in Dublin did you do it?
So it would have been called the Eastern Health Board scheme back in the day, as we would say. So the Mater Hospital, St. Brendan's,
all right.
Grange Gorman, which is now the
DIT.
The DIT campus, yeah. So I had the privilege of being able to see the institutional care then transform into care-based community, really. So I was at the tail end of that generation. Who
it was just coming into community-based.
Very much so, yeah. So it was lovely to be able to see that change.
Mm-hmm. And what drew you to psychiatry? You'd done all these other specialties in medicine. What was it about psychiatry, do you think, that drew you to it?
Well, I suppose early on in my career, I was noticing in acute medicine, particularly when I worked in Belfast, that there were many people being admitted with unexplained chest pain and unexplained physical symptoms. Mm-hmm. And I suppose it became clearer to me then at that point, maybe there's something else going on here. Is there some kind of a psychological or a psychosomatic underlying process here? And it just made me curious.
So you were seeing physical symptoms? Mm-hmm.
Unexplained physical symptoms.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So. I've seen quite a few as well.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah.
When there's nothing physically there.
Yeah.
That it's a more psychological kind of issue.
Yeah. So I suppose then at that stage, I was at a fork in the road and I was contemplating a career in general practice versus psychiatry. Decided to try psychiatry first and absolutely loved it.
Right.
And never looked back really from that day. Ended up, I suppose, training as a general adult psychiatry, but along the way would have had, you know, dabbled in many subspecialties. I also would have done some research. I worked as a research fellow in the area of schizophrenia. Went on to complete higher specialist training in Ireland and worked in the forensic mental health services for some time. That was a special interest.
What's forensic mental health service?
So I suppose, I mean, forensic in the kind of generic sense means looking for the underlying cause or digging deep to see what's driving a particular situation. But in Ireland and I suppose in mental health, what you're really referring to is how, I suppose, the interface between psychiatry and the law. So I would have had an interest in looking at mentally disordered offenders. Mm-hmm. We would have provided, I suppose, specialist care in the Central Mental Hospital in Dundrum to people with severe and enduring major mental illnesses and who may have offended along the way and ended up through the criminal justice system.
Okay.
That's in hospital. Really, so it was very, very interesting, very stimulating.
And how did you end up then in St. Edmundsbury?
Well, I went back into, I suppose, general adult psychiatry for a number of years, worked in the community, and then a position arose, a career opportunity arose. I'd always had an interest in the St. Patrick's Mental Health Services, of which St. Edmundsbury is part. Well, St. Patrick's would be the mother hospital. Mm. St. Edmundsbury is under the umbrella of the St. Patrick's Mental Health Services.
Yeah, yeah.
So same organisation, same clinical governance, etc. I suppose St. Edmundsbury is a little different, however.
Mm. Tell us.
In that, well, it's a very, I suppose, from an aesthetic point of view, we would be very, very proud of it. It's a wonderful
is
centre.
Is it only gorgeous?
It's really fabulous. Yeah. I mean, we like to call it the jewel in the crown of the services, being very modest.
Don't say that around here, they might get you.
Just in terms of greenery, is it? Or what
it's more than that. Yeah. I mean, you come out on the M4, so, you know, you're in your car with all the traffic and all the hassle, you pull off and suddenly you're at the gates of St. Ed's and it's just really wonderful. It's almost, it's like an asylum in the true sense, meaning a place of refuge. You come away from that busy hubbub of life and you're surrounded suddenly by a farm, a beautiful farm, crops growing, long driveway. There's even a colony of pollinating bees on the right-hand side as you approach the main house. So it's really stunning. Mm-hmm. And just as you turn on your way up to the main house or where the approved centre is, you see a whole cluster. It's like a woodland of, you know, ancient oak and sycamore trees. Absolutely fabulous. And you can imagine what the colours are like at the moment in the autumn. You look to your right and the fields, beautiful, lovely slopes down into the Liffey Valley. Absolutely gorgeous. It's just like a patchwork. Mm-hmm. So immediately you're getting this sense of seclusion.
It's a haven.
It really, really is. And that's quite aside from the whole official therapeutic part, which I can talk about.
So what kind of patients then would you be seeing in there? What kind of, you know...
Well, we have... Everybody is a voluntary patient, so we don't take anybody under the Mental Health Act. So why...
Is that a deliberate policy? Why was... obviously it's a deliberate policy, but why?
Well, I suppose really that, you know, any kind of mental health facility, any mental health facility that caters for people who are maybe very acutely unwell, who may have some behavioural disturbances, has to have a specific, I suppose, environment built. Mm. You know, the environment is very, very important, and I suppose staffing ratios, etc. Mm. But St. Ed's would cater more, I suppose, for people who are looking for refuge, a low stimulation environment. Very much we cater for the mood disorders and anxiety disorders. We also have a dual diagnosis program for people who would suffer with, say, both depression and a comorbid addiction.
Okay, so you'd have psychiatrists that are specialised working with comorbidities like that?
Yes, yeah. Okay. We have three teams, three multidisciplinary consultant-led teams, fully staffed.
That's incredible, fully staffed.
Fully staffed,
yeah,
yes, we
absolutely,
are.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, yeah.
What's the average length of stay?
Roughly, I mean, I suppose in terms of depression, we would recommend in or around 4 to 6 weeks, tending more to advise people to stay on for about 6 weeks so they can really get the full benefit of the program, because, you know, it's not just a matter of coming in and, for example, getting medication and staying in the bed for a few weeks. Mm. Far from that. We have very intensive treatment for depression, and particularly for treatment-resistant depression. So that's going to involve, you know, four main pillars. You're going to have your pharmacotherapy, psychotherapy, psych education, and you're going to have then, you know, we work very closely with families. So family involvement and family psych education is another core aspect of the treatment. So to get all that done is no mean feat in 6 weeks, given that, you know, really, if you have an acute major depressive episode, it can take up to a year to really recover.
What's the relapse rate then? Or, you know, do people come back?
It depends. For a first episode, you know, within a year, within a year, I suppose, you have, if you stay on your treatment for 6 to 9 months, you're going to have a very high response rate and you'll do very well. I suppose it depends very much on your adherence to treatment, on medication and other treatments, plus what's going on in your family, what's going on in your world.
Mm-hmm. I presume the fact that they have volunteered to stay rather than, as you say, being sectioned. Is that still used?
Still used, detained, yes.
That they are more motivated to
absolutely
take part.
Yes. So we find, and we know from international studies as well, that those individuals who self-refer and who seek out help have a better prognosis in terms of recovery. Mm. That being said, treatment-resistant depression is, by definition, it's hard to treat depression. So it requires, I suppose, very intense and prolonged treatment. Now, initially it's very intense because the first couple of weeks are hospital-based, often 4 to 6 weeks. But after that, then, you know, you can do a day program, and we have all of that at St. Ed's. And then as recovery progresses, the individual can then be followed up at, you know, outpatients in one of our dean clinics or, you know, any other outpatient setting. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes people will even go back to their own GP for continuing, you know, monitoring of their mental state, etc. So it's kind of heavy loaded at the front, at the early part of the illness, for a reason, you know, because early intervention is what's going to yield the best
results,
outcome. Yeah,
very good. Thank you so much.
I get the impression you enjoy your work.
Yeah,
I do. I do.
I got that impression.
It's nice to see a smiling psychiatrist.
Absolutely,
it's always very reassuring.
Dr. Rhea Morgan at the standalone inpatient mental health unit at St. Edmundsbury, which of course is under the St. Pat's wing. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
A few messages before we go to some music. Rory Lynch has been listening all week. He loves it and says, say thanks. Our pleasure, Rory. Patsy Gordon in Sligo, she was on via Twitter. She's enjoying the chat. Good. And Jim on Facebook with regard to Louise Hegarty, who was just on with us before. She says she's brilliant. Loves her voice. I hope we're as brilliant and
I love our
voices too.
Yeah.
We're in trouble if not.
I tell you now.
Because you can't see us.
And this is the last show, guys.
Oh, yeah. Well, so what time? It's 10 to 8.
10 to 8,
so
another hour and 10 minutes.
What will we be doing with ourselves after that?
I don't know.
Back to the real world.
I'll miss it, actually, because I listened all week on the radio in my car.
It.
Even my kids were like, oh my God, it's walking my shoes. They loved it.
And are they thrill skinny that you're on tonight?
Yeah, but I hope they're in bed. Right?
They can listen to the podcast.
Yes, that's it.
Let's have some music. This is Moloko. We'll be right back.
Mental Health Week. This is Walk in My Shoes Radio, broadcasting live from St. Patrick's Mental Health Services, Dublin 8.
Dancing in the Moonlight, Thin Lizzy. And what were you tapping me on the hand for there?
Nothing.
Mally's been tapping me on the hand trying to point out something, and I was going to make a mistake, wasn't I?
No. Go on.
Oh, all right then. We're Ireland's only pop-up mental health radio station, and we're back, and we've only got an hour left.
Oh, my God.
Will we slow down time and draw
it out? It would be nice, wouldn't it?
It's been a great week.
It has been
a great week. An amazing week of broadcasting and mental health awareness. You can still contact us. Our website, walkinmyshoes.ie, on Twitter and Facebook, we're at walkinmyshoes. The hashtag, if you're tweeting, is hashtag WIMSFM.
And later on, we'll have Kieran Mulvihill here to sing us out. But before that, we have lovely Anna Kyo, who's a relationships and sexuality education and board member of Shona. Welcome, Anna.
Hi, how are you?
Great to have you in here today.
Thanks for having me, yeah.
Great. So, Anna, if you could let us know a little bit about your own background and then how you became involved with Shona.
So my background was I did a degree in psychology in WIT.
Waterford Institute of Technology.
Yes, yeah. Very great good, place to be. I love Waterford. My granny's from
on
there.
On to Ball.
I love the accent, actually. Yeah, I can't do it, though. I was there for 3 years, and then I took about 4 years out and then went back to do my master's in sexuality studies in DCU. And from that then, yeah, things have just kind of snowballed, which is great.
And what sexuality studies? Tell me what that is.
So the sexuality studies master's is actually pretty broad. It's very theoretical based, so not as much practical kind of applications as maybe I would have liked, but the theory that you learn behind sexuality and gender studies and everything is really